happens. Lots of IU basketball talk coming up with Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star. We'll recap the Butler win for the Hoosiers. We'll take a look at what's next with two lower-level opponents forthcoming, and then, of course, the start of Big Ten Conference play after a little holiday break for this IU team. Stay with us for more coming up your way next right here on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison. Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
I'll handle this the way I want to handle it now that I'm here. You f***ed it up to begin with. Now just sit there or leave. I don't give a f*** what you do. Now, back to the game.
Here's Matt Dennison.
We are back on this Monday show. Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star, our guest. And, of course, lots of exciting IU basketball items to talk about on the show today, coming out of the big win Saturday over Butler. Rob Phinisee, the hero. But I want to start with Juwan Morgan. What a performance. What a consistent effort he gave. And really, that's nothing to be surprised at, given his career and given what he's been able to do so far this season. But I thought he was ultra consistent, ultra efficient in the game on Saturday, and obviously had a big point total as well.
Yeah, that's a big call, calling him ultra efficient when he scored 35 points on 14 shots. I mean, it was, and this is what I wrote, and I find myself often saying that this is what I wrote after the game. But it was, to me, one of the biggest takeaways is I don't know if Juwan Morgan's career is fully appreciated or not. I don't know how you quantify that. But I think Indiana fans should recognize that, they're looking at a kid that might win Big Ten Player of the Year. He might be an All-American, and the reality is he was operating at about that level a season ago. He was just a little bit more under the radar because Indiana wasn't playing very well as a team, but it wasn't like he was scoring, 17.5 points a game last year because he was taking 26 shots. He was still doing it in an efficient way. He was finishing his twos. Even into last season, he had improved his three-point accuracy. He's getting to the free throw line. His rebounding numbers are really good. He was also probably Indiana's best defensive player pound for pound over the course of the whole season. You're just talking about a kid that honestly, the career numbers aren't going to line up perfectly because he didn't play as much in his first couple seasons as he did in his last couple seasons. And obviously he had some guys in front of him, Max Bielfeldt and Thomas Bryant, and then he had his own injury issues. But you're talking about a guy who probably should be remembered as one of the better players at his position in Indiana history. If he stays healthy, he's going to push 1,400 points, probably break 1,400 points this season for his career. He's got a real chance to threaten the program's top 10 all-time in rebounding. And he, as much as we talk about, Romeo Langford and how does Indiana get Justin Smith going, and wow, Rob Phinisee has really impressed people with his point guard play early on. Don't forget that Juwan Morgan is kind of everything for this team. He is its heartbeat. He's its leader. He's its most consistent player. He probably isn't its most talented player in terms of just raw skill. That's still Romeo Langford. But the more you listen to opposing coaches, as much as anybody else, including Chris Mack, talk about Juwan Morgan, the more you realize he really may be one of the best forwards in college basketball.
Zach Osterman, the Indianapolis Star, with us Mondays. Great stuff to start the segment. I agree with everything that you said. Walk us through that final segment. Rob Phinisee gets the game-winning shot, but it obviously wasn't designed to end that way. Romeo Langford slipped. Some other things possibly broke down as well, but take us through that final possession.
Yeah, basically it was a play that was designed to get get the ball to Romeo Langford, and Butler denied him hard off the screen. This was something that I think both sides kind of talked about post-game. Everybody could kind of see what was happening, but just because everybody can see what's happening doesn't mean it's always a bad play call. Butler just defended it well. It obviously kind of got blown up, therefore, and Devontae Green, the way he was being guarded, the way that Romeo Langford was kind of trying to hedge over to him just to get the ball in whatever way he could, Green didn't really have an obvious avenue to attack. Phinisee came back to the ball. Green just kind of tossed it to him to get it moving somewhere. And Finney was able to at least, if you watch the replay, I mean, he shot that ball. It wasn't a heave. He was able to kind of get around the corner a little bit, square up, and it's obviously a 32-foot shot, but it is a shot. Like, he goes up and releases it like a three-point shot. And credit to my colleague, Greg Doyle, who absolutely called it midair and just said, boom, as it, I think, just about the time that the shot reached its peak and its arc and started to fall. And it's funny because Indiana ran that sort of right-to-left Finney drive with Deron Davis crashing backside against Arkansas that everybody remembers that resulted in the missed layup and the missed tip-in. They actually ran pretty much the same action at the end of the first half against Butler. Got a very similar result. This time Finney kind of tried to go up and under, still couldn't get it to roll. Deron Davis didn't have quite as clean of a look at a tip-in, but he still got a hand on it. And they ran that action twice in sort of end-of-half situations and got good looks and never scored. And then they get the game-winning three off a completely busted play that Butler defended, you know, superbly well. And I think it's, as much as anything else, it's kind of a reminder of something that can happen in basketball, which is you don't always fail because you screwed something up. Sometimes you do everything exactly the way you want to, and the other guy just does something a little bit, you know, a little bit extraordinary. Sometimes it's not your fault. It's their success.
Zach, obviously we've had many conversations now since the season has begun about Rob Finney and what he's done for this team. And a lot of it, especially early, was unexpected. I think the thought was there that Rob Finney could get some playing time and that he was going to be a quality player for IU at some point, even fairly early in his career. I don't know that anyone thought it would come as early as it did. And a lot of that was a breakthrough for him because of some injuries and other things that just didn't bounce right for other players early on. But with that said, the shot kind of, I think, sums up what this non-conference season has been for Rob Finney, what he's been to the team. He's been huge, and everyone is excited about his future at Indiana long beyond this season. He's just been a huge addition to the team that I'm not sure everybody saw it coming, at least this early as a freshman.
Yeah, there were definitely some people that were really bullish on him in state. I mean, I'll give credit to – there were people that told me, listen, I know what his ranking is, and this is people from Lafayette as much as anything else. Saying I know where he's ranked and I know what everybody says about, you know, this point guard or that point guard, but trust me, Finney's a gamer. He's a tough kid. He's a smart kid. He's a good basketball player, and he will have an impact early. Now, you know, some of this is also affected by Devontae Green's injury, but for him to go from basically sort of like starter by default to pleasant surprise to it's kind of hard to imagine Indiana not starting, you know, it's hard to imagine that starting point guard job not belonging to Robert Finney for the foreseeable future. That's a remarkable kind of, you know, turn in basically a month and a half for him. But he's earned that. That's not something that happened just because of circumstances around him. He's played great. I think he's been tough on defense. You know, he didn't have the best day Saturday, but Kamar Baldwin's going to do that to people sometimes this season. Finney makes good decisions with the ball. He's made a bunch of really important shots. I mean, he's not been a volume scorer really very much, but he made big shots against Penn State. He made big shots against Louisville. He made, even before the buzzer beater, I thought a couple of really big shots against Butler when Indiana was just kind of trying to tread water and then sort of push its way a little bit further up in the scoreboard. He's just a guy that doesn't seem overawed by what's asked of him, by whatever situation he's in, by a tough defensive cover. And that's not to say he's the perfect point guard, but I think he, especially on this team where you can defer from a scoring perspective to a Juwan Morgan or a Romeo Langford, you know, or even some other guys like Al Durham when he's shooting the three well, and Fitzner when he's shooting the three well, whatever. You know, I think Finney has given Indiana a lot of that steady point guard play that we weren't positive the Hoosiers were going to have.
Talking with Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star. You can read his coverage of Saturday's game at indystar.com/sports and obviously follow Zach for all of his updates on Twitter at Zach Osterman as well. Romeo Langford, a solid game. It definitely wasn't one of his best, but he did do a lot of things to help Indiana in the middle part of the game especially. Talk about his effort, his performance on Saturday.
I thought he played really well defensively at times, and I think that's something that maybe gets a little bit overlooked, as much because it's not even necessarily that people think he's don't think he's as good of a defender as he is. I think it is more that people kind of they want to see what he can do offensively, and they want to see the threes and the big dunks, and you know, you think about like that big finger roll he had in the second half, where he just kind of exploded past the defender, that sort of thing. That's what excites him more about a player like Romeo Langford. You're just not thinking as much about defense. But I thought he played well defensively. I think he's quietly been good on the boards all year as well. You know, and he's not the biggest guard rebounder in the world, but both he and I would also credit Robert Phinisee for this a little bit. They hunt rebounds really well for guards on a team that, generally speaking, is going to get a lot of its rebounds, obviously hoovered up by a Juwan Morgan or a Deron Davis or even a Justin Smith, who for all of his maybe struggles on the offensive end has been better defensively, and I think it's been solid enough on the boards. I think Langford and Phinisee both still hunt rebounds fairly well. And then he had a couple also just moments where there was that finger roll where you were just like, whoa. And there was also that offensive foul toward the end of the first half when he hit that three in the corner. I mean, look, I watched the replay once. I'm confident that wasn't an offensive foul. I'm confident that was just one person being significantly better at basketball than another person, and it looked weird, and I think the referees may have called it because it kind of looked odd, and they just thought, well, that must be something. but it was just smooth, effortless, and yet sort of dominant offensive play in that kind of moment. So it was a quieter performance from him. Indiana couldn't get him going. He couldn't get himself going. And Butler also, to its credit, defended him really, really well. But then, if the counter to that is Butler also allowed Juwan Morgan to score 35 points on 14 shots and didn't really seem interested for most of the game in helping, in trying to help Joey Brunk or Nate Fowler deal with him in a double situation or kind of like a post-trap situation or anything like that. So that's a little bit what, when you have that Langford-Morgan, dynamic, you can do to teams is they may say, we cannot leave. We are not going to leave Romeo Langford. Under no circumstances are we going to compromise the way we defend Langford. But then you can get a Juwan Morgan who can knock down four threes, hit all his layups, hit a whole bunch of free throws, and you say to yourself, well, it's we're damned if we do and we're damned if we don't.
Zach, a lot of talk about Juwan Morgan, and rightfully so, his leadership, his efficiency, some of his big performances this season. So a lot of the credit for this team, I think, goes directly to Juwan in many ways, on and off the court, what he brings. But with all the discussion that we've had this week and after some of these other big wins recently for Indiana about Romeo Langford and about Rob Phinisee and at times other freshmen as well, it's, I think, hard to deny this freshman class heading into this final couple games of non-conference play before the Big Ten gears back up, what a huge impact generally that they've had on the program, not just this season with whatever remains, as long as things continue to go in a fairly positive direction, but what impact this class with Langford and his just stature across the state, helping maybe with other recruits like Trace Jackson Davis and if Keon Brooks gets in the 2019 fold as well, but then Rob Phinisee, if he sticks around for a career at Indiana and becomes a key block in Archie Miller's foundation as the head coach at Assembly Hall, this freshman class right now and the potential for what they could mean to the program long term is just huge.
Well, and remember too that a guy who a lot of people thought, not just on rankings but also performances and practice in the preseason, was maybe the second best player in the class, and Jerome Hunter hasn't even played yet. And,
right.
I've talked to some people who are kind of more NBA minded than I am about, who were able to watch Indiana in the preseason and thought Jerome Hunter looked maybe not quite as consistently good as Romeo Langford, but really felt like there was a lot to like in Jerome Hunter's game from a professional perspective, and that they were really, really impressed with how good he was and how much he had sort of grown and developed. And so, I think you're right. And I still kind of hold a candle for what I think Demazie Anderson can be long-term. And I think there was always maybe kind of an inevitability, about the fact that Romeo Langford being around was probably going to always kind of limit some of what Demazie Anderson was expected to do as a freshman, just because they play, the game in some similar ways in a similar position. But you think about, like you said, Romeo and Rob Phinisee right now. You think about Rob Phinisee's impact long term. You leave open the possibility for Anderson and Jake Forrester to develop, and then you remember that Jerome Hunter, the second highest rated guy in the class, hasn't even played, hasn't dribbled a basketball in anger for Indiana in the regular season yet. It looks like what we thought Archie Miller was signing when he brought it all together, which was a class that was headlined by an elite player that was going to give Indiana a badly needed piece for this season and also maybe allow Archie to kind of start building a reputation for being able to coach those kinds of guys so that he could go to the next five-star and the next, one-and-done type guy and say, well, look what I was able to do here. But then also there's a lot of guys in that class that I think we're going to look back on as really foundational pieces, guys who stuck around for 3 or 4 years and were kind of part of Archie Miller's first, full cycle at Indiana.
We're talking with Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star. Zach's the IU insider for the Star and is with us on Mondays. A lot of talk about recruiting and of course, Romeo, the big prize, but others in the 18 class that we're talking about, current freshmen at IU, and Trace Jackson Davis, Armon Franklin, two in-state players that have already committed and signed. And a lot of people think Keon Brooks could be the next, possibly. So there's been plenty of talk, and you and I have done this, about Coach Miller and his success within Indiana thus far recruiting. A win over Butler, I think, is huge for Indiana because Butler has beaten Indiana recently. Butler has been on a national stage and deeper in the NCAA tournament, and I believe to more NCAA tournaments recently than what Indiana has. So I think IU has a lot of things going for it in the state right now, not just recruiting momentum, but getting back on track against other in-state teams, whether it be beating the mid-majors that you're supposed to beat and not letting you get upset, or winning against another high-major program that has made huge strides in recent years, or over a number of years, I should say, in Butler. But I thought Saturday kind of summed up a lot of that for what Archie Miller has been able to accomplish as far as IU's reputation in the state.
Yeah, I get anybody who sort of says that, Indiana should aim to be to do more than beat Butler on a last-second shot. But I do think it's time for Indiana fans to get comfortable with the fact that Butler isn't what it was 20 years ago when Indiana was playing Butler in the Hoosier Classic and things like that.
Yeah, I agree.
Butler's in the Big East. Butler has invested in basketball facilities and infrastructure that I would argue raise it up to the level of a high major. Butler has, as you said, performed on the court like a high major for a long time across a number of coaching tenures at this point. So it's not just like it was all Brad Stevens or it was all Chris Holtman. You can go back to Todd Licklider. You can look at some of what LaValle Jordan is doing early. And if nothing else, if you're Indiana, there's absolutely nothing wrong with wanting to aim higher than winning one game against a KenPom top 30 team on a buzzer beater on a neutral floor in Indianapolis near Christmas. That's perfectly fine. But something I always tell people is, go talk to guys on the 75-76 team. They'll tell you they probably should have lost their Big Ten opener against Ohio State. And that wasn't a good Ohio State team. And I think they either won on a last-second shot or won in overtime by 2 points. But the point is, seasons are made not on a dozen performances like Marquette, where everything comes together and clicks into place and it's just an absolute blowout. They're made on results like this. They're made on finding a way to squeeze out a win against a Butler when you're not playing well. They're made on grinding out a road win in the Big Ten. They're made on making a few winning plays down the stretch that separate you from a team like Northwestern. And at the end of the season, Northwestern is 8-12 in the Big Ten and Indiana's 14-6. But you look at it and you can say, well, Northwestern's 8-12 because they just kept losing these same kinds of games over and over again. And Indiana is 14-6 because they just kept winning those same kinds of games over and over again. And so I think it's a really good win for Indiana. Indiana's kind of in a weird situation where right now their resume really is quantity over high quality. It's not like they've beaten a Duke or a UNC or, Gonzaga, something like that. But they got 5 wins against teams in the KenPom top 50, and only 3 of those came at home. So they've been doing it away from Assembly Hall as well. And especially for a young team, a team that clearly is still maturing in some ways, that's only just now starting to get its back to something resembling full strength, I don't – you can you can express frustration with individual parts of different performances, but I don't think you can be angry with what Indiana is doing kind of at a macro level right now.
Zach Osterman, Indianapolis Star. Great stuff, as always, Zach. Great way to start the week. And, of course, IU with lots of momentum as they head into a couple games out of conference before the Big Ten season gets here in full. And, Zach, we'll talk with you again next Monday.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me, as always.
Absolutely. Zach Osterman, the Indianapolis Star, with us Mondays. We'll head to a commercial break. We'll come back with Chad Gilbert. He's Charlestown's athletic director. He's also an IHSA executive board member representing Southern Indiana. Always fun to talk Southern Indiana sports headlines with Chad on Mondays, and we'll do that next after this on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
Let's win this one for all the small schools who never had a chance to get here.
Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Let's win for Coach. You got us here.
Here's Matt Dennison.
And we're back. Final segment on this Monday edition of the program. Chad Gilbert with me. He's Charlestown's athletic director and an IHSAA executive board member. We talk Southern Indiana sports headlines Mondays to wrap up our program. New Albany, Jeffersonville, and Floyd Central all go down on Saturday night. That's not something, at least in recent years, you're used to reading about or seeing happen, especially in the same night. And Chad Lee Kelly told me just before this segment that the last time that happened, January 4 of 2014, I almost maybe would have thought when I heard that Saturday night late that it had been longer than that. But still, a little bit of an odd occurrence here in high school basketball in the area on Saturday night.
Matt, first off, I'm still fighting the holiday bug, but I'm digging down deep today. If you want to hoop with the Owls, you got people soar with the Eagles the next day. So I'm trying to dig down and bring my A game today. But anyway, talking about that, you know, what makes that such an oddity is because you're talking about three of the premier teams, not only in Southern Indiana, but historically in the state of Indiana. So that is, you know, that's something that you don't really hear of or you don't really think of too much. Now, is it something that they were off their game that night? I don't think so, because they all played very tough opponents. I believe two of the three were on the road. And then you got Carmel coming to the doghouse, which is Carmel sitting. Again, they're coming off a runner-up season last year and looking to make another run again in this March. So, you know, thinking about it, it doesn't mean that much, because you can guarantee that Coach Sturgeon, Coach Shannon, and Coach Luce are in the film room, they're in the lab, and they're putting together a practice plan today that draws upon the weaknesses of that game in order to get better. And that's what this time of year about. You know, with this time, with these games going into Christmas tournaments, you're trying to get better for that stretch run after Christmas.
Chad Gilbert is my guest. And, you know, I was also glad to see over the weekend, we do talk a lot about New Albany, Jeff, and Floyd Central. And I'm just glad that we talk high school basketball and have people that want to hear about high school basketball that listen to this show, because there's a lot of places where high school basketball on a daytime sports talk show, not something you're going to hear very often. But Southern Indiana's different. We know how special it is. We know the rise recently of high school basketball, and you and I continue to promote it and push people to get out to some of these big games. With that said, I was glad to see Silver Creek and Jeff kind of be a game that people were buzzing about for Friday night. People were excited to see how that early season matchup went. Silver Creek has some great talent, young and old, a great mix, big plans, I know, for them in the tournament. And sometimes you can really test your mettle going against some of these local teams like a New Albany, like a Jeff, like a Floyd Central, if you're one of the other schools that maybe doesn't always get the attention or credit that they fans feel they probably deserve. So, Jeff, a big win on Friday night. They turn around with a loss on Saturday, but I was very interested to see how that Silver Creek Jeff game went, and very glad to see it get a lot of interest from fans.
Well, you know, talking on the Jeff, just touching on that a little bit, Coach Luce had back-to-back games against two very strong teams. That will only help you come to tournament time. But the Jeff and Silver Creek game was a great buzz, a great crowd, a great atmosphere. And we'll talk about Coach Hoffman in just a second. He is going to use that game, and he will get better off that. You know, that he will work on his rebounding. He will show those guys that there's another level of quickness out there that you've got to go to. When you're beating teams by 40 and you're 15, 16, 17 years old, it's easy to think that you've arrived. That will reel the Silver Creek Dragons in. I saw the next night they snuck by Bedford. So, you know, they're probably a little bit of let down coming back off of that loss because that's hard to get kids back up. However, they found a way to win, and Bedford's no slouch. You know, Bedford is waiting in the wings of someone who could make some noise in that Seymour region, or excuse me, in that Seymour sectional. But you think about the other teams, you know, we talked about the top three, and you get the 3A teams. My Pirates won two games in a row this weekend against Rock Creek, and Providence was a huge win. And then Southwestern with Jerry Baumholt, who, in my opinion, you know, you talk about the best coaches of all time, the best coach in the state. He's very, very good. I went and spent some time with him trying to learn how to play his 1-2-2 zone. And you want to talk about an excellent teacher, an excellent coach. Jerry Baumholt is on the top of the list of anyone. So to see the Devils go down there and take that loss like they did was no surprise. You know, the good news is Jeffersonville or Silver Creek does not have to see Jeffersonville in the tournament, and Jeffersonville does not have to see Southwestern in the tournament. So it's an opportunity that these guys can work and grow and get better.
Chad, I want to get to a couple other things, but one more high school basketball thing. I was ready to crown, I think, Silver Creek maybe as the best team in the area, just barely ahead of Floyd Central, had the Dragons won on Friday and then Saturday, as they did Saturday. Obviously, they lost on Friday. When Silver Creek lost on Friday, I was ready to say, okay, definitely Floyd Central is by far the top team. I should take that out. Not by far, but is the top team. They've got a lot of things going their way. They're going to be a real threat to win every game this season and maybe to win a sectional at Seymour. They lose on Saturday at Bloomington South. Now, all of that is still true for Floyd Central, and all my good thoughts still exist for Silver Creek as well. But with both of those teams losing, Silver Creek on Friday and Floyd Central Saturday at Bloomington South, it does make you scratch your head about the area just a little bit more. Who gets your vote at this point for the top team through, three and a half weeks of high school hoops?
You know, it's just hard to say. I think there's a lot of parity. I think it's a situation that in March, it's going to be a whole lot of fun because there's a lot of basketball left. And it's just like the game. There's going to be ups and there's going to be downs. Whoever can stay level-headed throughout the season, who can stay level, not lose too much, not get too down on themselves, not too get full of themselves, is the team that's going to get better and the team that's going to win. The one thing all those teams have in common, they've got great kids who want to get better and they've got great coaches who know how to win. So these teams have not reached their peak. And they will continue to get better, which makes it fun for guys like you and I to enjoy and watch the games.
Chad Gilbert, Charlestown Athletic Director, IHSA Executive Board Member, always with us on Mondays. Rob Finnessy, last second shot. What a big time shot. What a big time win for Indiana.
There was no question. Amy and I were watching the game. We said, who's going to shoot the last shot? You know, everybody thinks, you know, Romeo's going to get the ball. You know, you think about Morgan maybe getting the ball down there. Against Arkansas, Finnessy shot the last shot against Arkansas that could have won it. You know, it came off. But we both said number 10 is going to shoot this shot. You know, the game's tied. What's the worst that can happen? You go into overtime. He stepped up big. He had a huge shot that sent Hoosier fans across the state wild. But what a great classic. You know, what a classic ending that gets people excited going into the holidays and a great win for the Hoosiers. They continue to get better each and every week and look for them to progress in that rugged Big Ten conference because the Big Ten is outstanding. Outstanding teams from top to bottom, and league play is going to be a bear.
9-2 as Indiana plays two more non-conference games, both of these upcoming games against lower-level D1 schools. So the potential is very likely for Indiana to go into the new year 11-2. That's pretty exciting, I think, for IU fans.
It's absolutely exciting. But, you know, for us, again, I hate to harp on this. These are Indiana kids who are making these plays. When Indiana kids are involved in the Indiana colleges, it makes it so much more exciting, so much more fun to watch. And you as a fan, you feel part of it because you know that kid. You watched Romeo Langford from the seventh grade on. And you've got a connection with those guys, and it makes it that much more fun to cheer on our state college teams.
And I think that underscores what you just said about the Crossroads Classic. It's a lot of fun to see our in-state big-time college basketball teams do battle, which is why I hope that event sticks around. I know there's some that have decent arguments for maybe why Indiana should go play somewhere else on a more national stage, especially if they keep turning the corner here. But when these Indiana schools hook up and it's a lot of Indiana guys on all four of those rosters, it just makes that day even more enjoyable.
Oh, it not only does it make it enjoyable for the fans, but it makes it enjoyable for high school coaches and high schools, because that kid that's playing for that state college, they're proud. You know, they're proud to know that that kid went to New Albany High School, or that kid went to McCutcheon High School, that kid goes to Bloomington South, whatever high school they went to, that whole community is rooting for that kid and that team.
Chad Gilbert, Charlestown AD, IHSA Executive Board Member. I guess we got another minute here. Before I let you go, Silver Creek Tournament, it's going to be fun. It's traditional. It's one of the great traditions of the area. Four schools that have played forever and ever and ever in that event. Hit that for us real quick before we let you go.
The longest tournament in the state with the same four teams. The should be a lot of excitement. Charlestown beat Providence by 2 points. Sean Smith came in. Sean Smith, one of my favorite guys, favorite coaches out there, class act. Coming to Charlestown Sports Arena, lost by two to the Pirates on Saturday. They get a little bit of rematch here in 2 weeks. Jason Cottle has our Pirates playing very well right now. We're off for 2 weeks. I saw Sean plays Trinity and has some teams coming up. So he'll have a chance to see where he's at. Our guys will have to come in there battle-tested, ready to go. I think Brian McSpoon's done a good job with Clarksville getting them better. But you got to think Brandon and the Silver Creek Dragons are head and shoulders above everyone else at this point. However, that's why you play the game.
Absolutely.
You got to go out there and see how it goes.
Chad Gilbert, Chad, as always, thanks for being with us on Monday. You know we'll do it again next week as the season rolls along.
Matt, thanks for the run. Take care.
Absolutely. Chad Gilbert, always with us Mondays. We kind of recap things coming out of the weekend locally here in Southern Indiana. A lot of basketball when we chat as well. That's going to wrap things up for today. Thanks so much for being with us to start the week. Don't forget we do the Hoosier Report each weekday, 11 o'clock right here on the Big X, and of course the three replay at 3 o'clock as well. You can stream us at BigXSportsRadio.com. There's a lot of ways to listen to our program, whether it be live or as a podcast. Speaking of podcast, SoundCloud app, a great way to stay up with us. If you miss a segment or a full show, you can find us there. Download the free app or point your browser directly to SoundCloud.com/Hoosier Report. Again, SoundCloud.com/Hoosier Report. We're also on Apple Podcast as well. Just type in the Hoosier Report. Leave us a rating and a review if you would. It'll help us reach others that might be interested in a podcast about IU sports and things here in Southern Indiana. That's going to do it for today. I'm back at 11 o'clock tomorrow. Tuesday, we've got Greg Doyle with us of the Indianapolis Star. We've got Mike Pegram of Pigs.com and much more. Also, don't forget tonight, 7:05, Archie Miller right here on the Big X Sports Radio.